Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he's bringing that awesome sauce. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I feel good.
You do, huh?
It's gonna be a good episode.
I'm feeling it today. I'm feeling the energy, you know? Right. Like, I feel...
We shouldn't horse around too much.
No. Nay. We will not be horsing around. This isn't no dog and pony show around here, folks. No. We do. God. Let's gallop right along. Joining us this week is Aaron Stavely, production manager over at Main Six, developer of the indie fighting game sensation, Them's Fightin' Herds. Do you like fighting games and My Little Pony? Then this might just be the game for you. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm Aaron Stavely. Glad to be here.
Wow, you are on point. You are here.
Well, you have to understand Aaron's background, Stephen. Yeah. Aaron did, from what I can gather, 3 videos on YouTube about Them's Fightin' Herds, then got a job with the company. Is that proper and correct?
That's correct. Yes, I did. The developers of Them's Fightin' Herds are friends of mine from high school, and I was between jobs one summer and decided that I was going to help them out using video skills that I had acquired in high school and kind of just carried forward as a hobby through college. But I wanted to do something cool for them. They were making this awesome fighting game, Them's Fightin' Herds, and I saw that one of the biggest issues they were having in getting the game out there is that there weren't a lot of training tools. At the time, they didn't really have a tutorial. People were just sort of discovering them and getting to know them. And I thought that a good way to spread word about the game and to teach people how to get started is to make a tutorial video series. And I made an Arizona spotlight video first, which was about 7 minutes long, that taught people the basics on how to play the poster child character of TFH. Later went on to Oleander, who's my main. And then I went back and did
main.
Main. Oh boy.
Who do you main? Yeah, we've heard it all before. So then I went back and my third video was a basic controls video that just went over the absolute basics, like what do the buttons do? How do you block? And you'd be surprised how many people in the comments responded like, so that's how you block. Because like there's a Venn diagram of our target audience. And on the one side, you have people who are fans of the show and fans of the aesthetic. On the other side, you have people who play fighting games. And there is a portion in the middle, which are absolutely in love with our game, but there are people on the show side of things that maybe they've never played a fighting game before. They've never played a fighting game seriously before. And we are doing all that we can to invite them into the FGC and grow our community and get people more into fighting games. And we're setting out to make a fighting game, not just, you know, like hit some buttons and whatever. If we actually want to bring traditional fighting game mechanics into an accessible form.
Well, that's actually a really good segue because our editor-in-chief over at dualscreens.com actually started writing guides for this game and had a lot of good, great words to say about the game. But before we get into that, let's tell everybody what the hell they're listening to. Folks, this is the Dual Screens podcast. This is an interview show where we bring on an industry guest to tell us their story and discuss their latest project. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, a voice actor, a production manager, or somebody that just makes YouTube videos about a game and then gets hired later on to actually work and be a part of the team. Everybody has a story to tell, and this is their platform to do so. This show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home, podbean.com, and of course, on youtube.com/dualscreenstv, and really anywhere. If you got a program that you can listen to podcasts on, we're on it, folks. That's it. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. It helps the show tremendously. Now, I want to segue right into this because I'm going to pick just a couple of sentences from this article. So again, this is on dualscreens.com. This is called Them's Fightin' Words Tusslin' Guide Part 1. This is by our editor-in-chief, Thornstone. I want to read just the opening paragraph here. Them's Fightin' Herds excuse me, developed by developer Main6, has a deceptively cute aesthetic for a downright ruthless 2D fighter. The limited cast of characters is balanced out by their depth, each one feeling unique with a variety of interesting traits to define their playstyles. This is evident in tutorial mode, with a unique spin given to each fighter for almost every section. The robust combo trials also do a great job of showing you some expanded options for decimating your foes. Now, let me tell you something, Aaron. Thorn is a big-time fighting game aficionado. And you got him on this thing now. So you're doing something right here.
Nice.
So
glad to hear it.
What has reception been for a game like this? What is the community? Because I honestly don't. That's a Venn diagram I don't want any part of. That's a Venn diagram that scares the crap out of me. Being both a terrible at fighting games and also really afraid of the what do they call the bronies?
Yeah.
That's
pretty much opposite ends of the spectrum.
So what is that community like? Give us some snippets of what that's like behind the scenes.
So the two halves of the Venn diagram are kind of on opposite ends, is that the show is, and the community is often misunderstood, not really well represented. You know, with any fandom that goes really hard into stuff, like on both sides, both the FGC and, you know, if you're a fan of any type of media, the ones that you see the most often tend to be like the very, very small majority of people who are just kind of really loud, mm-hmm. and may not be entirely representative of the whole. Most of the people I meet in both camps are very nice people and like the thing they like, and they're perfectly reasonable human beings. But, you know, people say stuff about people who play fighting games, and people say stuff about people who like the show that isn't altogether, you know, it's generalization. It's not altogether accurate. And so we're kind of trying to bridge the gap here by offering both of those camps something for them. So when we go to events like Frosty Faustings or Combo Breaker or just any event where we expect to run into people who play fighting games, the first impression is always, what is this game? This looks weird. I don't know. The cartoon, the ponies, I don't, what is
this? I can't take this seriously.
Yeah, I can't take it.
There's a llama of some kind.
What would my mother think if she saw me playing this game? Just like all kinds of jumping to conclusions about the art style. But then the moment that they sit down and actually play it, they're like, oh, I see. This is an actual fighting game. This is actually a lot of fun.
Are there any issues with like parents looking at this game and not realizing that it's kind of a high octane fighting game? Like, do you have any? I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, just looking at it, you kind of get it from that. But I can imagine with some of that aesthetic, you have a little bit of a weird disconnect there, no?
Well, honestly, I haven't heard any. There are kids who play our game whose parents have introduced their kids to our game.
And, okay.
You know, there's kids who will be, you know, the sons and daughters of people who are coming to FGC events, locals. And they'll see our game and they'll look at the characters and they'll go, oh man, I love that cow and the alpaca. They call it a llama, of course.
Yeah.
And there's a sheep and there's little dogs, and they love the art style. Or they'll know, they'll be familiar with the My Little Pony show, and they'll recognize that certain characters are based upon the original counterpart. So they'll take Paprika and they'll go, oh, it's like Pinkie Pie, except she's a llama. So they make that connection to the aesthetic. And then when they play, they actually do have a good time, even though they're just button mashing. They have a good time. And it's okay that, you know, there's more fighting game there beneath the surface that they don't get to. The fact is that they like the way the game looks, and they have fun hitting buttons and watching the characters fly around. And they laugh and they smile. And that's great. We haven't really heard of any parents complaining that their kids aren't having fun because the game's too complicated. Like, they just It seems to be in that nice balance of like mashing buttons does just enough to satisfy young children. And the look of the game really appeals to them as well.
What do you find more satisfying when you have someone from the brony camp who maybe isn't into gaming as much, sees it and says, okay, I can get into games with this as an entry point, or a serious fighting game fan who says, this looks like kiddie shit, I'm not going to get this in the time of day, but then falls into the trap and now is obsessed, like our resident Thornstone, who was like, it caught him off guard how great the game is as a fighting game fan.
I think that there's an equal amount of joy in both things happening, but it's a different kind of joy.
Right.
for FGC people to get into our game when they didn't think that they'd want to, when they fell into the trap, so to speak. It feels immensely validating that we can be considered among the greatest fighting games that inspired us to make this game. And then on the other side, when people who don't have much experience playing fighting games get really good, that's amazing, because we just made a new member of the FGC through our game. Some of our best players started on TFH. And from here, we're trying to get them to branch out and actually play games that aren't ours, because they'll learn things and then bring them back to our game and be even better. But yeah, it's like we've seen both happen. We've seen people who went from zero to winning, getting top eight and winning tournaments consistently. And we've seen people who were very skeptical about our title and then they sat down and played it and now they can't get enough.
Now, you mentioned, you know, among the best fighting games, there's some merit there, because I feel your game compared to the heavy hitters, how does your game have a better lobby system than most fighting games out there today? Can you explain that for me?
Well, I'm not sure.
What are you guys doing right?
That
even Smash Brothers can't get right.
it's tougher working at a big company, because I think your priorities are different. Mm-hmm. There's more of a, there's franchise standards to uphold, there's shareholders to appease, there's more pedigree and more integrated engineering and systems that you have to maintain. So it is more difficult for an established fighting game company like Arxis or Capcom. Mm-hmm. Especially Nintendo. I don't think Nintendo has fully figured out how to make good online yet, but that's okay. I can forgive them, because they are excellent game designers.
Severe understatement, to say the least.
but I can appreciate what Arxis and Capcom are going through, because doing things that are new are sort of risky, and they have, honestly, we don't know for sure. The way that these companies work is private, and we can only speculate just like anybody else. This is just my opinion, but I just don't think that they have seen how important it is to people. Mm-hmm. Is that they know what makes a good fighting game on the surface. You want to have cool characters and flashy combos and esports potential.
Right.
But that long-term maintenance of having good netcode, having good ways for players to connect to each other, has been not as high of a priority to them. And I believe that is changing because of the current global situation, forcing people to play online and only online. And because we've been very vocal, that is, you know, the fighting game community, about what we want, and mm-hmm. they're starting to listen. Arxis is putting Rollback in Strive. That is excellent. That's an excellent way forward.
And what is that for those of us, meaning me, I have no idea what that is. What is that?
Okay.
Rollback. What?
So when I say netcode, that refers to the code that makes playing online possible. It's the system that allows players, that handles all the the back end workings, the gears and the pipes of getting players to play on matches online. Mm-hmm. And to simplify, there's two basic approaches to netcode in fighting games. And the one that most developers are using right now is delay-based, meaning that when you have a connection with another player, there will be inevitably variance between the quality of your connection. Right. Some packets will be dropped, there'll be interruptions. And so delay-based netcode creates a buffer zone where it sort of waits for inputs to absorb a little bit of the impact that happens from interference, so that you get a smooth, continuous play experience without hitches. But it means that it feels like you're kind of playing underwater.
Interesting. Okay. That's what Smash feels like to me. Whenever I'm playing Smash, especially if it's more than two players, it feels like an absolute, like you're playing in quicksand.
Yeah, exactly. It just feels sluggish and unresponsive, but that's delay-based netcode.
We had a guest on, I think it was the, kickball, what was the name of that game? Kung Fu Kickball.
Yeah.
And I believe he was saying that what he uses for his game was, and I think this is what you're talking about, was one that where one player is the host, and I guess the other player's button in inputs go to his game locally. Does that make sense? Is that the other type? Am I understanding that right?
What I think he's describing is called peer to peer, which is a slightly different area of netcode. When one player is the host and then other players connect directly to a player, that's peer to peer as opposed to server authoritative netcode, where inputs go up to a server and then the server sends it to the player. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's slightly on a different edge of the coin that is, or the Rubik's cube rather, that is that code. So there's peer to peer and server authoritative, which are on two sides of the spectrum, and then there's delay based versus rollback based, and they're not necessarily opposites; they're just different ways of solving the problem. Okay. How rollback works is that it will. Basically, instead of waiting for your opponent to tell you what you're doing, it will assume that what your opponent entered five frames ago is still the move that they're doing. And so it will sort of predict how the game is going to go based on what buttons people are pushing. And for you on your side, it does not wait until your opponent has told you that it knows that you're pushing that button. It just does it for you on this side. And the two computers will sort of talk at and over each other rather than there being like a tennis match where the code is going back and forth and each system is checking to make sure that what's coming into it is accurate. So when you have two systems that are basically just sending data at each other, you are inevitably going to run into desyncs. In that case, a rollback occurs where it looks at the data that you received and the data that it sent and goes, wait a second, there's a mismatch here. And it rewinds the game by a few frames and resumes play from a point in which it knows that it was synchronized. Hmm. So in most cases, this is imperceptible to players. The rollbacks are so small that people barely even notice them. But sometimes if there's an especially bad network hitch, the game will basically rewind a quarter of a second. And that's what's called a rollback. And so there is the potential for stuff like that to happen. But the benefit is that you feel like you're playing next to somebody because you're not waiting for the opponent's computer to tell you what you did. It just happens in real time on your computer. And your opponent, the opponent's character on your system is being told in real time from your opponent's machine at the same time. So that's an engineer can probably explain it a lot more accurately than I just did. But that's a basic overview of how rollback and delay based netcode are different.
Is that something that like you need to decide you're going to do at the beginning of development? Or is that something that you can swap systems? Like, for if something's not working the way you want it to, can you swap to a different type of netcode? Would that just basically destroy everything? Like, I'm curious to know how early on in development, when you know, hey, we're going to do online competitive, we need to figure out how we're going to do that now. Is that pretty much the case?
Rollback netcode is not really a drag and drop solution. It does require the developers to integrate it into their game, in the way that their game is works on a fundamental level. So people can shout at Capcom to put rollback netcode into Street Fighter V all they want, but Capcom would basically have to rewrite the game from scratch in order for that to happen. So
that's fascinating to me. That, I mean, it seems that rollback is what the online fighting community wants, and for Capcom and Street Fighter to not foresee that, I feel like that's a grave misstep and miscalculation on their point and their part. Is that not accurate to say?
I think from our perspective, it seems that way, because that's something that we really want. And why don't more developers do this? Why can't they see this? Is a common thing that people say. But we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. There could be a number of reasons why they can't do it. It could be technical. It could be we're not focusing on netcode improvements for that game right now. We might consider it for a future title. There's so much that you can't know about what's going on in the minds of the people running the company that I can't really say. But the best I can say is that if you really want something, talk about it, pressure the developers, make it known that this is something you really want, and they'll have conversation with you, hopefully, about it.
See, I understand that perspective, how it can get complicated on the developer side. Like, again, if you're rewriting code, etc. But how do you explain not having a game that teaches you how to actually play the game? And I feel with them fighting herds, again, you guys seem just way ahead of things. You're teaching people fighting game basics and how to actually approach playing a fighting game. When I play on Mortal Kombat, like, their story mode is just, it's cinematics, and it assumes you know how fighting games work. But you guys are more like, let's teach folks what fighting games are, what anti-air means, what, you know, zoning is, all that stuff.
We've chosen to focus on that part of the experience for players. Mm-hmm. And while it seems like it's a no-brainer, I think I understand why larger companies don't necessarily focus on it. Fighting games are very hard, and they're very complicated. And teaching players how to play fighting games it's difficult. And because tutorials do require development time, and it can often be very labor intensive to sit there and figure out how to teach these complicated concepts to someone, it seems like it's less of a priority for developers to make tutorials that are geared towards people who are completely new to the genre. They assume that the people who are new to the genre are going to either seek the knowledge for themselves via the community and other sources that are not sponsored by the developer, wikis, things of that nature, and that the people who are really just in there for, you know, good, clean button mashing fun are just going to go and play the fabulous story modes that I see coming out of new fighting games, like especially the ones that, you know, NetherRealms are doing. Those are hugely popular, and is a big reason why people buy those games.
I'm in that camp.
100%. They'll just play those. There's a middle ground of people who did I say something weird?
Oh no, like, that's me, and I'm in that. I refuse to learn things like to seek that information. Like, if you're not going to show it to me immediately in the game, I'm not going to do homework.
Oh, yeah, I gotcha. No, I thought you were saying some aside, like, oh, he said something.
There's no study group for us here at Dual Screens. Like, we are very much Neanderthal when it comes to learning a video game. If it doesn't grab us in 30 minutes, we're out.
No, that there's a very real, there's a big subset of players that are just like you guys, that they just want to buy Mortal Kombat, pop it in, romp around in story mode, play the friends on a Friday night, and then they're pretty much done with the game. They wouldn't play a tutorial even if there was a really great tutorial. We are choosing to focus on that part of our experience because we realize that there are a lot of people who don't know how to play fighting games that really want to play fighting games, and we are targeting that group of people. We're looking for places to exceed in that the larger companies have decided for whatever reason are not where they're deciding to focus their development efforts. And I don't blame them. It seems bewildering from an outsider's perspective, but there's a lot of things that the big fighting games have that we don't. They have a lot more pizzazz and a lot more flash than we do. They have big established franchises that people have come to expect certain things from. So they have to make different choices than we do when it comes to time to decide what to put in their games. So teaching tools and tutorials and netcode and lobbies are things that I guess for whatever reason they've decided are secondary objectives to making sure that the character designs are great and the game plays and feels good at its core. Those are things that they've put a lot of resources, I guess, for lack of better words, into, and I'm not really sure why. I don't even think they know why. I don't think there was any decision made, you know, screw tutorials, we're not going to put as much effort in that. I think it's just a very complicated thing, and they may not have realized how important it was to players until recently.
Yeah, a lot of developers, you know, kind of rely on the checking your command list, you know, like looking at your command list saying, oh, that's that move, that's how I pull that off, or, you know, going through massive amounts of tabs. Like Mortal Kombat does this too, where you go through and you could hit 4 or 5 pages of different moves that your characters can do, and it can be very overwhelming, and especially when you come across somebody who knows these things like the back of their hand, and that kind of comes with franchises evolving and piling mechanics on top of their legacy, you know, just keep adding to, and eventually, you know, there's kind of like this apex of knowledge that you have, whereas a new gamer coming into a Mortal Kombat 11 doesn't have, you know, 8 games worth of knowledge. I also think that fighting games are very unique in this aspect because there are so many different subgenre of fighting games. You have your like Samurai Showdown, you have your Mortal Kombat's are very different from your Tekken's, which are very different from your Street Fighter types, which are very different from Smash Bros, which are very different from your Power Stone, your 3D brawlers. There's so many different genre to kind of choose from that not everything is the same. And if you're a Street Fighter fan, like I grew up playing Street Fighter, not necessarily playing Mortal Kombat. And when I remember the first time I got into Mortal Kombat 2, I want to say it was, I had been playing Street Fighter for so long that it was completely foreign to me. So I can imagine somebody coming into a fighting game now and there not being a tutorial and being completely put off by it and not being able to take that step from curious to casual and then casual to core and then core to hardcore. I imagine there's a little bit of a disconnect there for those players.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the franchises are big enough and there's enough information out there about them that I'm guessing that they assume that if you want to learn this game, you'll find resources on your own. That's what I was saying before. Like the communities are so large that and there's so many videos out there that teach you how to play Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. So there isn't as much of a need for the developer to create a robust in-game tutorial because there's already a lot of resources out there for people to learn if they really are into the game and they want to do that. We don't really have the same luxury. We are smaller. We have a less populous player base compared to, you know, franchises that have been around for over a decade, like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and Killer.
You might say they kind of take it a little bit for granted, their player base for granted a little bit, in the fact that they're comfortable maybe not growing that player base because they know it's going to be there, and maybe they don't have to really do that. And if you want to grow the fan base, maybe put in a couple of easier to grasp characters, your clone like characters. Like for me, I can't do any of the Guile type characters in Street Fighter, but I could play a Ken, which is, you know, who I grew up playing. So like maybe they put somebody like that for the newer players. But
sure.
Yeah, it's just interesting. It's interesting to me because that community is so tight-knit that it's hard to really break into the community at large, let alone specific community genre. Like if you're trash at a game, it's very hard to find a group that is going to bring you in to kind of learn you the ropes. You are very much on your own in the fighting game community. Like you need to go out there and practice and practice and practice and learn your combos. I remember watching our editor-in-chief, who's like I said, a big fighting game fan, when I forget what game it was, Andy, it was one of the recent fighting games, one of the ones that we saw at PAX East. What was the name of that game? Shoot.
Oh, wait a minute. It was based on an anime.
Yeah, it was one of the anime
games. Oh, it's escaping me now. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Anyway, when the game first came out, he was streaming.
It was Granblue. Just... Was it Granblue?
Yes, it was Granblue. Granblue Fantasy, right?
Yeah.
He was streaming just him fighting a dummy in the practice chamber, learning everything there is to learn about his one character that he decided he was going to main. And he did this for hours, hours and hours and hours of him learning this character. And that's crazy to me. Like I don't think I would ever be able to focus that hard on something like that. And so many games do stuff like that.
It's, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I would argue that the people who play fighting games are not opposed to new players. I think that there is the FGC knows that the FGC is small and the FGC wants to grow and they want people to get more into fighting games. It's just that it's a very hard skill to learn. And if you didn't grow up with it, it can be very hard to get in because there's just so many things that become intuitive to people who've been with the genre for so long that it's a bit of an uphill battle for people who are just coming in. And the rewards of being good at a fighting game and the camaraderie and the relationships that you develop with people who also play fighting games who are at your skill level you can't get that anywhere else. Like there's just something really special about going to these events and playing with people and learning new stuff and watching the best people play your character and do really well at it and learning from them. Like that's such a great feeling. But the person who's trying to break into that really has to put themselves in the right mindset in order to be successful. They do have to practice. They do have to approach their matches with a sense of I'm here to learn, not necessarily to win. If you're just in it to win it, you probably are going to get frustrated before you get too far because you're not going to win every match you fight. You may not even win most of the matches or even half the matches you fight, but the goal is to continuously get better. And part of our goal with TFH is to create as much accessibility as we possibly can, because that's what the FGC is trying to do, is they're trying to demystify fighting games and make them more accessible, but still fighting games. So there's been many attempts to simplify and streamline fighting games, like Dragon Ball FighterZ is very, very fun to button mash. And there's like, you know, button dashes and the grabs are kind of ranged because there's a dash forward. There's auto combos. There's lots of stuff being done on the top level to bring fighting games sort of more accessible. And then there's people who are just going straight from the bottom, games like Fantasy Strike and Dive Kick that are saying, we're going to just strip out all the needless complexity from fighting games and approach it from the core fundamental of what a fighting game is. which is, you know, good neutral and spacing and predicting what your opponent's going to do and setting them up for stuff. TFH kind of sits right in the middle of those two, where we're a traditional fighting game, but we have a lot of universal mechanics so that the stuff that you learn for one character applies to all the others. We have free flow combos so that you can improvise and you aren't restricted to doing a certain series of buttons for each character. You can kind of just like play around with stuff. But we still have hold back to block and high low and cross ups and all the things that make a fighting game in the traditional sense.
But what if you lose all of your matches?
If you learn something new and you're better each time you play, it doesn't matter. You could lose every match you ever fight, but if you're continuously getting better and you're able to lose less against better players, I'd say that's progress.
It's like when I win our ninth match in Mortal Kombat, Andy, right? And I'm on top of the world, and basically you suck and failed at life because you lost one.
Well, your
match
thing
to
is
me.
Always like, oh yeah, back isn't block in Mortal Kombat. That's your biggest failure when you play that game.
True, true, very true.
Can we discuss a bit of drama for a second?
There's drama.
Well, of course, there's always drama.
Please.
So, this game was born out of it was originally going to be a game based on My Little Pony, and then things happened.
Things did happen.
Cease and desist.
Yep.
So I want to discuss that. Also, what does it feel like now that the game is actually a huge success? It looks like a big fuck you to that.
You could have had some of this money, you jerks.
It is. It does provide cathartic emotions for
yes,
sure.
But it does. Walk us through that.
Well, so it's an interesting turn of events, and I'll give a brief sort of overview of what happened. Mm-hmm. With the disclaimer that I was not around. I was not with the team during the MLP days. I actually joined the project back in December of 2018. About 10 months into their early access release.
So you were there for the glory days, basically, is what happened.
I brought the team up from a place where they really needed to have a manager because they didn't have one. And any development team that doesn't have a manager is going to have issues with people not keeping track of things, not communicating, not staying on top of PR. There's just certain things you can't do when you're making a game that you need somebody to take care of for you. And I fulfilled a role on the team that was much needed and worked my way up from there. But that's something we can talk about later if you want to.
Sure.
The history of the game. So like I said, the developers of the game are personal friends of mine from high school. And they've told me all the stories from those times. So I am retelling through their anecdotes. I was not there. Just want to, make that clear. But we have gone over everything pretty thoroughly. So I think I have a pretty good understanding of even the emotions that were being felt.
Oh my god!
During those times, because we've had late night talks over drinks over what happened. So, but anyway, let me roll back. So
that's a funny joke.
Yeah, no pun intended. the show was an inspiration to the devs. My friend Omari, who goes by Nappy, that's his handle online. He's the lead combat designer and animation director of the game, and he was inspired by the show. It made him want to do art again. It made him want to animate again. He just got really into the story and the characters and the art and started digging into the community more. And he found a group of people who were joking about making a game. And it turned out that the joke was actually getting a little bit more serious, and people started posting screenshots and, what characters would look like and what moves would be. And finally it got to the point where they were like, so are we doing this? And so it just sort of They found an engine, Fighter Maker 2K, and they made one character with one move, and they put it up on the internet, and overnight it got hundreds of thousands of views.
Holy shit.
And they looked at it and they were like, oh, we should probably take this more seriously and actually do something with it. And so they just sort of became the guys making the pony game. And it started to get more and more popular. It started to catch on. And just before the game saw its first public release, up until then it had just been, you know, trailers and streams and work in progress things. Two very unfortunate things happened. One, the build was leaked to the public, and then a cease and desist was issued by Hasbro. So the unfortunate thing was that was a very hard time for the crew, because it was something that they had built. They had put a lot of effort into, a lot of love, and they had never intended to make money off of it or to profit from it in any way. They just wanted to make a really cool piece of fan art to show their appreciation for the show and put it out there for the internet to enjoy, and then just sort of, that was it. Mm-hmm. That was all that it ever would be. And unfortunately, Hasbro, it was getting big enough that Hasbro felt like they needed to step in, and they put a stop to it. And they thought that was it for a while. It was soul crushing, to say the least, that you put all of this hard work into something over multiple years, and then in one fell swoop, it's just gone, means nothing. But then a series of miracles happened where Lauren Faust, the original creator of the fourth gen My Little Pony TV show, stepped in and offered to design new characters for a new IP and a new game. There was a lot of questioning as to whether or not that was real, because it was like, how could you even fathom, like, you made a fan game, like, you weren't expecting this to go anywhere, and then the creator of the show, the very person that inspired you to do this thing in the first place, personally contacts you and says, hey, I like what you guys are doing, I've been following your progress. Like, she even thought that someone in the studio working on the show was behind the game. It was that good. And it changed everything. Like, they had renewed vigor, so to speak, to keep going and make TFH their own and take what they liked about the show and carry it forward the way Lauren had originally envisioned it, because she had left the show by that point.
Right.
And then Mike Z and Lab Zero licensed the Z engine to us, the same one used to make Skullgirls, free of charge as part of their second Encore Indiegogo campaign. And then everything was back, and it had made a complete 180. So it had gone from like the lowest low to the highest highs in an instant. And it's just been a series of miracles since then. Now we're in Evo. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Jeez, man.
What a turnaround.
It started as just
like a soap opera level of drama there.
I know. It's like, it started off as, wouldn't it be cool if, and then now all of a sudden we're a main stage Evo title, and it's like, right, crazy how far
things come. There should be a no-clip documentary about you guys. Yeah.
Well, we actually do have a documentary made about us. It's made by Hold Back to Block, Esteban Martinez, who has worked with the no-clip guys in the past, but kind of split off and started doing his own thing with the FGC side of things. And he did make a documentary about us, and it's very good, and highly recommend that you check it out.
Definitely.
Amazing. Speaking about Evo, I have a listener question, Steven.
Okay.
And this comes from Thorn. Love that, Thorn. Indeed. And he says, I'm just really wondering how much the exposure from being a title at Evo Online has affected the player base. Has it seen a huge spike, or has it been more of a modest affair?
It has seen a huge spike. Our Discord user base, around the time of Frosty Faustings, which was at the start of this year, was about 2,000 members in Discord. Mm-hmm. And now we're at 6,000. So our player base has tripled, at least in Discord, since the Evo announcement. A lot of those joined shortly after we released our 1.0 version in late April. And then a few weeks later, the Evo announcement went down, and yeah, the player base has exploded since then. It's been amazing.
What does that feel like? I mean, so you go to Evo, it's like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, alpaca in a fighting game. I can't reconcile that in my brain somehow, but it makes sense though.
I mean, it's a good fighting game is a good fighting game. Yeah. At the end of the day, like, we just want to offer players a fun way to get into fighting games, and also in an aesthetic that and a story and with characters that we really enjoy.
It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, I'm looking at this thing, it looks like it's going to be a blast. So, awesome. All right, Andy.
Your time?
It's that time. First of all, speak into your microphone, because you're getting lower and lower as the show goes on.
I apologize.
it's like you're so slowly sorry. Melting in your
I'm
chair.
I'm so sorry. It's a bad neck code. I apologize.
Let's roll back to about 15 minutes ago when everything was beautiful. All right. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, for everybody's favorite segment. It is time for rapid fire questions.
Mm-hmm.
Rapid fire questions. Now, this is how this works, Aaron. It's rapid fire, which means we're going to ask you stupid stuff, and we are expecting stupid answers off the top of your head. That's pretty much it. That's how it goes.
Okay, let's do it.
Is cereal a soup?
No.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
How many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop?
Oh my goodness. I think somebody did a study on this once and actually found out exactly how many licks it takes.
Didn't they use a robot though? With like a sponge?
Something like that. It was very scientific and very inhuman. I'm going to say I'm in the three camp because I can't wait and I just bite straight into it.
Heard that. Mm. You're an owl.
Exactly.
Aaron is an owl.
When was the last time you touched a horse?
Actually, my sister owns horses. She does a hobby called cowboy mounted shooting, where you ride a horse around an obstacle course and you use a six shooter to pop balloons to try to shoot for time and accuracy. And she's a super badass. And last time I touched a horse was when I went to go visit her and I pet her horses, which were, she has three horses now, Whiskey, Stormy, and Queso. And I think it was last spring. So it's been a while, but it was recent-ish.
Have you or are you going to try and get one of these horses in the game?
I don't think so. We actually don't have any horses in the game right now, and I don't know if we plan to. So maybe the name will come up at some point randomly, but as a horse character, no, I don't think so.
I think Queso is a great
character. Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, he's got that kind of sort of like pale yellow. He's exactly the same coloring as Queso that you get from like Chipotle. It's amazing.
Would you rather be without elbows or without knees?
I think I'd rather be without knees.
Fascinating.
I want full use of my arms. I can find other ways to get around, but I need my arms.
Is it for aggressive gesturing? Is that what it's for?
I'm doing it right now.
Now, I want you to think hard about this. Would you rather have taste buds on your hands or on your feet?
I think I would want taste buds on my hands.
Think about all the things you touch.
When you shake someone's hand, nonetheless.
Well, if I had taste buds on my hand, I'd probably adjust my social greetings protocols. Because the reason why I chose hands is because it seems like I have more control. Because if they're on my feet, they're just in my shoes and I'm tasting the bottom of my shoes constantly. All the time. I guess I could do something creative and like put fruit by the foot on my feet.
Hell yeah.
Rather than I'm like constantly getting
the problem right there. Or like sour patches.
Lace your shoe with sugar, simple syrup. Just step. Ew, that's gross. No, that.
But like, I'd probably wear gloves and then I could just take them off and touch something that I wanted to taste. That seems like I would have more control over
the foot thing.
The foot thing. Plus, I like to walk around barefoot and I don't want to touch what's on, I don't want to taste what's on the floor. I think that's gross.
Give us a non-inspirational quote.
Life is hard, so don't try.
Got it.
You'll never feel pain that way. You'll just coast through life in endless mediocrity.
What will it say on the headstone there? The epitaph, you know that word. That word's hard.
Words are hard.
Aaron Stavely, like, he lived a life.
Yeah, he certainly did the thing.
He did the thing.
What sound does an alpaca make?
Kissy noises.
Kissy noises.
Would you rather have super strength or X-ray vision?
That's a tough one. I think X-ray vision, because
expound.
Well, there's two. Oh, this is a good one, because they're two very utility like things that can have like, because the first thing I thought of was, what can I make the most money out of with this superpower? And super strength is cool because you can just lift things and people can pay you to lift things. But X-ray vision is like, people can pay you to solve really, really highly technical problems. If you can see through walls and objects, you can know things that are unknowable from a safe distance. And I feel like that has the potential to make more money than super strength, to be honest.
So to build on that, what about the power of flight or invisibility? Which one?
I think that people have asked this one before. And I've had an answer, flight or invisibility. I think I would choose invisibility.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a similar reason. Like, I'm okay with things taking a little bit of time to get to, but invisibility means that you can be in places that you're not meant to be, and you can know things you're not meant to know. And I think that's powerful.
Nefarious is what it is. It's nefarious.
I'm entirely thinking like a Slytherin right now, and thinking of what's going to help me get the most power, so that I can do what I
power
want.
And wealth, apparently, are like your top priorities.
Exactly.
Money and power.
Money and power. That's what I want. Because then you
would
can
you
do
rather exactly? Would you rather live off the grid on nobody's radar with just complete peace and quiet, or would you rather have all the money that you could ever want?
See, if I had all the money I could ever want, I could live. I could pay to set up infrastructure that lets me live off the grid completely. I think, unless you're arguing that with that money comes fame, and in order to upkeep it, you have to like get out there and do stuff and know people.
I'm wondering if you have all that kind of money. I'm wondering if you're able to actually be off the grid, because you'll be on a lot of radar if you have, like, if you are the wealthiest person on planet Earth by, you know, exponentially. I feel like the governments of the world will know you exist and where you are, you know.
Maybe there could be the richest person in the world, richer than Jeff Bezos, and we have no idea.
This is true,
because they're very good.
That is true. That is true.
I think I would rather I think I'd rather just have a ton of money, because then I could make my sanctums and my oases as best that I can.
And you could change the world if you wanted to.
And I could have influence and actually do things, do good in the world rather than just be a fly on the wall.
Hmm. Would you rather have your breath smell like a bad fart or have your laugh sound like a fart?
I think I'd rather have my laugh sound like a fart. Because that way, it's more endearing. If your breath smells like fart, then that's just
unfortunate.
Nobody likes that.
Imagine this though. Imagine this. You go to a comedy club, right?
Uh-huh.
The comic is slaying, and all of a sudden, the comic just hears. What's that interaction?
That's like a giggle, like, though. Like if what? It was like if you're like really
you don't
laughing.
Like my comedy, bro. No, I really do. I really, really do.
Like if you're busting a gut laughing, what would that fart sound like?
I think it has the potential to create good moments in a show. I've seen, I've seen plenty of skits where the performer riffs off of somebody's weird laugh, and it ends up being a good time.
What does the medical bracelet look like for that condition?
Like, oh my god!
You gotta show like really. If I laugh, it sounds like here's my medical condition. What do we call that medical condition?
Oh god,
there's got to be some sort of medical term we can look up and combine. I would two Latin sounding words.
Yeah, exactly. I need to Google it. Nothing's coming to mind. Flatul.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Something. Flatulaughter.
Flatulaughter is a good one. Flatulaughter is a good one.
There you go.
All right, Andy, hit us up with our final question. Oh boy,
here we go. This is it. Now, Aaron, you've been asked a lot today on this podcast.
I certainly have.
Serious questions, some not serious questions, but all great questions all around. But this is the quintessential, the ultimate question. Mm-hmm. Are you ready for this?
Right? I think so.
Right.
There's no tutorial for this question.
There isn't. Aaron, Andy or Steve?
Oh my goodness. Do I have to? Both have been so great.
You would be on a very short list of people who didn't answer the question.
Really? Okay. I'm going to go with Steve.
Yeah, damn right you are. You
broke my winning streak there, Aaron. And I've been winning for a long time in this question category. So
it's a gut reaction based off the fact that I can see Steve.
It always works in my favor, man. It always works in my favor. I got the camera going. I'm not afraid to show my beautiful face, my beautiful fotch. There's no fear here, folks.
I can see all the fotch right now.
All of it. The facce brutta, as my aunt used to say. Ladies and gentlemen, that is going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening to us. Don't forget, folks, we do other shows right here on this very same channel. We have the Dual Screens Gamescast, which posts each and every Monday and records live on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. And we have seasonal content that posts on Fridays whenever we can actually record it. We are a couple of weeks behind on Dual Screens Versus. We have two hosts that I've been trying to schedule guest hosts to come on that show, and it's just been kind of a pain in the butt getting them because they are both in completely different time zones. So we're working on it, and I promise when we get them recorded, they will be up. Like I said, it's on the very same podcast network. You don't have to subscribe anywhere else, so scroll back and check out our other shows if you'd like. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy, and our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/DS Podcasts. Aaron, where could everybody find them's fighting herds on social media and you and everything else?
So if you want to learn more about the game, a good place to start is to go to our website, main6.com. That's M-A-N-E, like a horse mane, and the number 6.com. You can also do themsfightingherds.com without the apostrophes, and that'll both take you to the same place. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's going to be main6, but all spelled out, S-I-X instead of the number 6.
Perfect. All right, so that brings us to the end here. Our theme song is Retro Chatter by Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio, Andrew Douglas for our cartoon art, Matt Murray for our overlays and logos. Thank you, everybody who contributes to the show. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice, and brand new father, Nestler. Colton, congratulations on the baby. We wish you nothing but luck, and thank you so much for being a supporter of this show. And folks, if you want to support us in another way, if you want to buy some of our merchandise, it's at dualscreens.com/store. Aaron, it was an absolute pleasure hanging out with you.
Thank you so much. Great talk.
This was awesome. This was awesome. Andy, as Dude. Always, it's been a pleasure with hanging out with
always
you.
A blast.
Do you have anything you want to tell the listeners, the kids, before we go?
Well, thanks for listening. I love you all. And we'll see you really soon.
We will. Yeah. We will. That's going to do it for us, folks. Thank you so, so very much. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Andy. And as always, please be excellent to each other.